This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There's word today from the International Energy Agency that demand for oil in the U.S. is growing so quickly now that it's outstripped oil use in China for the first time since 1999. That is a positive economic indicator for the U.S., but it comes at a cost. On Tuesdays, we get some perspective from Julie Nieman, the analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Morning, Julie.
Morning, David.
So Americans increased oil consumption more than China using the 2013 figures that are out this morning. Now, some of that is China's economy cooling down a bit last year, certainly. But what's driving this in the U.S.?
Well, for the first time in a long time, we have affordable energy. And now this is beyond just gasoline. We're looking at natural gas. We're looking at oil. When you spend less for energy, you're going to have an expansion of capital spending. Expansion of spending means more jobs. More jobs means higher wages. So you're looking at energy really being the fuel for economic growth for the foreseeable future.
Now, before we get too ahead of ourselves here with win-win-win situations, growth can come at a cost, especially when we're talking about burning more fossil fuel. That's more carbon dioxide linked to climate change, right, Julie?
Well, you're looking at what is the least offensive product out there, and that does happen to be natural gas. Nuclear, of course, is the best, but we're not going to see much expansion in that at all. So if you're replacing coal with natural gas, this is going to be a net benefit to the economy and also to the environment.
Nuclear, of course, when it comes to not producing carbon dioxide, but of course there are other problems. Julie Nieman at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Julie, thank you.
You bet.
The annual meeting of the World Economic Forum kicks off tomorrow in Davos, Switzerland. The corporate and government elite will gather in the Alps for 4 days of policy, private networking, skiing, and sumptuous dishes of raclette. This year, one of the big items on the agenda is, ironically, inequality. Marketplace's David Gura reports.
There's a lot packed into this conference, more than 250 panels and lectures, and plenty of opportunities for networking.
I think there are real possibilities for concrete action to come out of a place like Davos.
Catherine Klein is a professor at the Wharton School who went to Davos last year. She says you feel like you're among the who's who.
And if Davos and the World Economic Forum says this issue is important, that also gets folks' attention.
Darren Acemoglu teaches economics at MIT. He's never been to Davos, but he welcomes the focus on inequality.
It's good that, you know, the media, policymakers, academics are paying more attention to it.
Acemoglu notes there is an irony here.
They can spend a week in the most luxurious circumstances flying in their private jets precisely because of the inequality that we are talking about.
But Acemoglu says if the economic and political elites in our society are genuinely interested in a social problem like inequality, well, they can attract attention to it and contribute resources to address it. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Let's check in with a newish law that makes it easier for investors to go online to buy a sliver of a small business, Kickstarter style. Using crowdfunding to buy stakes in an enterprise is part of what Congress and the administration called the Jobs Act. As Kate Davidson reports, it's how one real estate company in Washington, D.C. hopes to shake up local economic development.
Sharon Lewis has lived along the H Street corridor for decades. When she describes how the neighborhood's changed, she chooses her words very carefully.
On H Street, it used to be a lot of hairdressers, but now it's a lot of bars.
It used to be a black neighborhood, but now it's gentrifying. It's booming. But developer Ben Miller says it's been impossible for local people to invest in development right across the street.
Who owns your environment? You don't know. Who's building your environment? Who's building your city? Not you.
So Miller and his group Fundrise started selling shares of private real estate projects to the public online. A slice of ownership, $100 a pop. First, they bought 1351 H Street with private capital, then crowdfunded part of it.
This building has almost 180 owners.
It's going to be an Asian night market. 906 H Street has 360 owners, and at 1300 H Street, there's an old library site that Fundrise wants to buy and turn into apartments.
It could have 10,000 investors.
To solicit small investors now, Fundrise goes through a lengthy review with the Securities and Exchange Commission. But once the Jobs Act is implemented, crowdfunding can take off nationally. The whole point is to make it easier for small businesses to access capital. But there are risks.
Do not invest money in crowdfunding that you can't afford to lose.
Rick Fleming is with NASA, not the space people, but the state securities regulators. He says, remember, most small businesses fail. He says lighter regulation could lead to more fraud, and you can't sell your crowdfunded shares on the stock exchange.
If you invest, say, $10,000 in one of these businesses, you're not going to be able to get that money back anytime soon.
Still, a lot of people investing in Fundrise just think it's fun and interesting. Elon Schnitzer lives on H Street. He expects a 7% return.
My first $7 dividend check, I will take right back to the restaurant that comes in and get a sandwich.
He won't have much say in the property he owns, but at least he'll get lunch. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
And we've done a flurry of stories over the years about the reluctance of U.S. businesses to adopt credit cards with microchips inside, as is the fashion in Europe and beyond. 10 years ago, Target stores did a project with Visa to test the added security of the chips. But as the Wall Street Journal reports today, there were concerns about bogging down checkout lanes, and retailers and banks couldn't agree on who would pay for the upgrades. Now, in the wake of hackers getting into the info of 70 million Target customers, Target's CEO is again calling for the chips. It's not clear if the chips would have prevented Target's massive data breach, however. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.